Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to international broadcast at home is quite easy. You could use a shortwave radio with a schedule of English language broadcast, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports, find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from France 24, NHK Japan, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, and Radio Havana, Cuba. We will begin with France 24. The European Union held a special event in Paris to launch a 500 million euro initiative to encourage U.S. scientists to relocate to Europe to pursue research that's been cut off by the Trump administration. Palestine has been hit with near-daily airstrikes from Israel, and Netanyahu announced that all Palestinians will be removed from the Gaza Strip and that the Israeli army will be in charge of food distribution. France 24.
Europe wants you. That was the message to U.S.-based scientists at the Choose Europe for Science event in Paris. The continent's goal is to attract researchers who are disgruntled over U.S. science policy under President Donald Trump. And the European Commission is putting its money where its mouth is.
Science is an investment, and we need to offer the right incentives. This is why I can announce that we will put forward a new 500 million euro package for 2025 to 2027. To make Europe a magnet for researchers.
Von der Leyen also called it a miscalculation to question the role of science in today's world, a thinly veiled reference to the political and financial pressure Donald Trump is putting on American universities and research facilities. Trump's proposed budget for fiscal year 2026 calls for unprecedented scientific funding reductions, a 56% cut for the National Science Foundation, and slashing the National Institutes of Health budget by about 40%. At the event, French President Emmanuel Macron called Trump's targeting an error.
Let's cherish free and open science and reject a diktat that would mean a government can say it's forbidden to research this or that.
Macron promising an additional 100 million euros from France to attract foreign researchers. While EU countries can offer competitive research infrastructure and high quality of life, salaries lag behind U.S. levels. This investment aims to close that gap during a rare opportunity to lure top science talent to European shores.
Since the fragile ceasefire collapsed mid-March, Palestinians have been subjected to near-daily airstrikes. Hospitals, like this one in Jabalia, continue to receive an influx of wounded and killed. Now, the Israeli army is going to intensify its offensive and plans to conquer the Gaza Strip.
Gaza's population will be moved for its own protection.
The announcement made by Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu on Monday has rippled throughout the international community. France's foreign minister called the new military campaign unacceptable.
The Israeli government is in clear breach of international law and international humanitarian law.
While the UN has urged utmost restraint.
This will inevitably lead to countless more civilians killed and the further destruction of Gaza.
But the United States still stands staunchly behind its ally, and President Donald Trump says his office is ready to help.
People are starving, and we're going to help them get some food. Hamas is making it impossible because they're taking everything that's brought in, but we're going to help the people of Gaza.
As part of the escalation, Israel's Security Cabinet also unanimously approved plans to put the army in charge of food and other goods in the enclave. However, for more than 2 months, they have barred any supplies from entering, and rights groups have decried the humanitarian crisis that has pushed thousands of children to the brink of death from starvation. While Hamas, for its part, has said it will not be continuing ceasefire negotiations as long as Israel's, quote, hunger war continues in the Gaza Strip. In Jerusalem, too, there is discontent. More than 70% of Israelis say they do not trust the current government, and hundreds protested outside the Knesset on Monday night. Some argue that the war is continuing so that Netanyahu can keep his job.
Those reports were from France 24. France 24 may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English, as well as most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, NHK World Radio Japan. Top officials from the United States and China will meet this weekend in Switzerland to discuss the trade war. Putin says bilateral ties with China have never been better. Putin and President Xi met at the Kremlin while Russia celebrated the victory over Nazi Germany in the Second World War. India has attacked Pakistan in what they call retaliation for last week's terrorist attack on tourists in Indian-controlled Kashmir. India bombed in Pakistani territory, killing 31, and it was claimed that they also lost 5 fighter jets. Japanese defense leaders met with Indian counterparts and agreed that Japan will assist in the development of fighter jets and tanks. NHK Japan.
Top officials from the United States and China will meet this weekend in Switzerland to discuss their ongoing trade war. Indications from Beijing are China is in no mood to compromise over what it calls the U.S. abuse of tariffs. Heading to the meeting are U.S. Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent and Trade Representative Jamison Greer. Vice Premier He Lifen will represent China. Bessent says the talks will take place on Saturday and Sunday. Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesperson Ling Jian says the U.S. has repeatedly expressed hope for discussions. He says the talks are being held at the request of Washington.
The tariff war was launched by the U.S. If the U.S. wants to solve the issue through dialogue and negotiations, it should stop threatening and exerting pressure and hold talks based on the principles of equality, mutual respect, and benefit.
In their fight over tariffs, the U.S. and China have slapped each other with additional duties of more than 100%. Russian leader Vladimir Putin insists bilateral ties with China have never been better, but he and President Xi Jinping say they're not stopping there. Putin and Xi met Thursday at the Kremlin. Outside, people across Russia marked the Soviet Union's victory over Nazi Germany during World War II. The celebrations take place annually on May 9th.
The brotherhood of combat between our nations developed during those tough war years and is now one of the foundations of our modern-day relations and strategic cooperation. Our ties are equal and mutually beneficial.
Facing a countercurrent of unilateralism and international bullying, we will work with Russia to promote equal, orderly, and multilateral economic globalization.
The leaders held a news conference after their summit. Putin said Russia-China ties have reached their highest level in history, and he says he'll be visiting Beijing in September to commemorate the end of World War II in China. All eyes are on India and Pakistan, two nuclear powers who appear to be drawing closer to an all-out conflict. Pakistani officials say at least 26 people were killed and 42 injured after India launched strikes on areas including parts of Pakistan-administered Kashmir. Defense officials in India say they attacked 9 sites, targeting bases used by Islamic extremists. In Pakistan, military commanders claim 6 places were hit in Pakistan-administered Kashmir and the eastern province of Punjab.
Now that India has launched an attack, I'm concerned about possible escalation. To avoid that, this situation should be resolved through dialogue.
I'm outraged by India's attack. The Pakistani military should take retaliatory measures. It should show an appropriate response to India's Prime Minister Modi.
It's necessary to take a revenge what happened in Pelgaon. That is not good. But we don't want war to be escalated, because war is not good for everyone. So it is just a good reaction that we have to give and we should give.
The strikes come 2 weeks after gunmen in India-administered Kashmir opened fire on tourists, killing 26 people. Indian leaders accuse Pakistan of involvement. Pakistani officials have denied the claims. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio has expressed concern about the mounting tensions between the two nuclear powers. He wrote on X, he's monitoring the situation and is resolved to continue engaging leadership in both nations towards a peaceful resolution. A spokesperson for UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said the chief is calling for a maximum military restraint from both countries. The spokesperson added, the world cannot afford a military confrontation between India and Pakistan. In 2019, India crossed the de facto border in Kashmir and conducted an air raid in retaliation for a suicide attack.
Japan's defense minister has wrapped up talks with his Indian counterpart. They agreed to work toward establishing a consultation body to oversee progress in defense cooperation. Nakatani Gen and Rajnath Singh met in New Delhi on Monday. They say the new body will include senior officials from Japan's self-defense forces and the Indian military. Nakatani says the global situation is rapidly growing more complex, apparently with China's increasing assertiveness in mind. Singh said India is keen to obtain equipment and technology from Japan. The two sides plan to look at how Japan can help India develop fighter jets and tanks, such as by exporting engines. They also agreed to expand joint drills.
India is an extremely important country that shares common interests in the peace, stability, and prosperity of the Indo-Pacific and the rest of the world. We will work quickly to bring about cooperation.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're now heard at 10 p.m. at 13710 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. All the times I announce are for Pacific Daylight Saving Time, so please adjust them to your time zone. NHK is also available at most podcast sites. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. More on the escalating war between India and Pakistan, including an interview with Benish Javed, who is from Pakistan. There are reports that Ukraine has launched a new incursion into Russian Kursk. The Gaza Freedom Flotilla, originally organized in 2010, was bombed by drones while preparing to deliver relief aid to Palestine. Several were injured and the ship is inoperable. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
India says it has carried out precision strikes on militant sites inside Pakistan and Pakistani-administered Kashmir, claiming to have killed what it calls a number of terrorists. A spokesperson for the Pakistani military says 8 people were killed in the strikes, which it claims hit civilian targets. India's army says 3 of its civilians or citizens were also killed by Pakistani troops in Kashmir. Islamabad says its response to India's strikes is already underway. Tensions are soaring between the two countries over last month's deadly attack on tourists in the Indian part of the disputed territory of Kashmir. Let's take a listen to what Pakistani military spokesman had to say.
There have been 24 impacts in Pakistan at 6 locations. These impacts have been carried out by India in different ways, using different weapons at 6 locations. In these attacks, 8 Pakistanis were martyred and 35 were injured. This cowardly, unjustified act of the enemy will be responded to strongly by the Pakistani army, responding with the support of the Pakistani nation.
India says it has carried out precision strikes on militant sites inside Pakistan and Pakistani-administered Kashmir, claiming to have killed what it calls a number of terrorists. A spokesperson for the Pakistani military says 8 people were killed in the strikes, which it claims hit civilian targets. India's army says 3 of its civilians or citizens were also killed by Pakistani troops in Kashmir. Islamabad says its response to India's strikes is already underway. Tensions are soaring between the two countries over last month's deadly attack on tourists in the Indian part of the disputed territory of Kashmir. Let's take a listen to what Pakistani military spokesman had to say.
There have been 24 impacts in Pakistan at 6 locations. These impacts have been carried out by India in different ways, using different weapons at 6 locations. In these attacks, 8 Pakistanis were martyred and 35 were injured. This cowardly, unjustified act of the enemy will be responded to strongly by the Pakistani army, responding with the support of the Pakistani nation.
Binish Javed is from Pakistan and reports on the region for us from Berlin. What do people in Pakistan think, Binish?
As of now, what the statements that we are hearing from Pakistani officials and some of the sound bites that we have seen from Pakistanis, they are united behind the military. They are united behind the government in these retaliatory attacks. But we also have to understand the context of Pakistan. Most of the Pakistanis you'll speak to, they would not want a war with India. Pakistan faces immense domestic challenges. It is still recovering from a chronic, very severe economic crisis. Pakistani military is stretched. It is fighting cross-border attacks that Pakistan says emanate from Afghanistan. Just last year, more than 1,000 Pakistanis were killed in terrorist attacks. There is an active insurgency in southwestern province of Balochistan, and now Pakistan, it's very difficult for Pakistan to afford a new front on its eastern border. So most Pakistanis, although they are united right now behind their government and behind the military, it's something that most Pakistanis would not want. And imagine this anxiety that is happening right now in the country. Islamabad, the capital, is in a state of emergency. The government has also declared the province of Punjab, the most populated province in the country, in a state of emergency. There's a lot of anxiety of how things will fold and how things will turn out in the next few hours.
The very latest there, thanks to Binish Javed in Berlin. There are reports Ukraine has launched a new land-based incursion into Russia's western Kursk region. It's where Ukraine sprang a surprise attack on Russian territory last year. Moscow had only just recently claimed to have gained control of the whole area, though Kyiv said it still had soldiers operating on the Russian side of the border. Now, Russian military bloggers say Ukrainian forces have attempted to cross into the country again. That's been confirmed by the local governor. Both sides are reporting deaths from military activity, ordering evacuations of several settlements.
A group of activists says its aid boat was hit by a drone strike as it prepared to deliver humanitarian supplies to Gaza. Authorities responded to a fire on board a ship of the Freedom Flotilla Coalition off the coast of EU member state Malta. Now, no casualties have been reported. The activists were hoping to break through Israel's blockade of Gaza, which the UN says is facing one of the worst humanitarian crises in the world.
These images have been released by the Freedom Flotilla Coalition. The group says one of its vessels, the Conscience, was attacked by Israeli drones, causing a fire to break out on board. The Maltese government says maritime authorities responded to a distress call and immediately sent support. It says the fire was put out within hours and everyone on board was unharmed. Activist Greta Thunberg was in Malta getting ready to board the ship. But she says the damage means it can no longer set sail to Gaza as planned.
There was an unprovoked attack with 2 drones, which led to an explosion that caused significant physical damage to the boat, making it unable to continue. Right now, if the boat continues, it will take on so much water that it will sink. That means that this attempt to get aid into Gaza will not be able to get in the assistance that is so urgently needed.
Israel has cut off Gaza from essential supplies, including food and medicine, since the beginning of March. The UN and the Red Cross say the conditions for civilians in the territory are catastrophic.
Food stocks have now mainly run out. Water access has become impossible. In fact, as I speak to you, just below, downstairs from this building, people are fighting for water. There's a water truck that has just arrived.
For years, the Freedom Flotilla has sought to draw international attention to Israel's blockades of Gaza. But their missions to deliver humanitarian aid directly to the territory have always been resisted by Israel.
Those reports were from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary, as well as most podcast sites. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this program, there's a link for online donations available at my website, outfarpress.com, or you could write to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. Many, many thanks to everyone who's ever helped keep this freely distributed show on the airwaves. Please help if you can. And if you're listening on a public radio station, they have an even greater need for your support these days as well. We will conclude with Radio Havana, Cuba. More on the bombing of the unarmed Gaza Freedom Flotilla ship carrying volunteers and aid set to leave for Palestine. Then a viewpoint on Trump signing an executive order removing restrictions on deep-sea mining, while many scientists warn it will create irreversible damage to the oceans. Radio Havana, Cuba.
The Conscience, a Freedom Flotilla coalition ship carrying volunteers and aid destined for the besieged Gaza Strip, remains stranded at sea for the fourth consecutive day. The unarmed civilian vessel was attacked by drones in international waters 14 nautical miles off Malta early on Friday, last Friday, May the 2nd. The ship suffered severe damage to its front section, including loss of power. Four people aboard were injured, suffering cuts and burns. The Freedom Flotilla Coalition has blamed Israel for the attack, calling for Israeli ambassadors to be summoned over what it described as a clear violation of international law. Andre Kalus, a movement graffiti activist, said, "Now we have seen that Israel is even daring to attack in the heart of the Mediterranean Sea, close to many European countries. Even at this stage, what we see, the reaction from Europe is silence." Members of the flotilla, the Freedom Flotilla Coalition, said that the group was in talks with the government of Malta about allowing the vessel to enter waters of Malta to repair the damage and continue its journey towards Gaza. So far, Malta has said that unless his government is allowed to inspect the vehicle, the vessel rather, it will not allow it into Maltese waters and ports. Historically, Malta has had a stand that upholds the right of the Palestinians to live in the land and have their own state. Observers say, however, in the face of genocide, that stand is being perceived as being very weak because it is not called genocide by its name and has not advocated for what it needs to advocate at this stage. That is the sanctioning, the punishment of Israel for international war crimes. Some members of the Freedom Flotilla Coalition have also said that the fact that no Western government has so far reacted to last Friday's drone attack on the humanitarian ship demonstrates the impunity of Israel and the complicity of the West in Israel's genocidal campaign in the Gaza Strip.
Scientists, environmental advocacy groups, and politicians have expressed concern over the damage caused by deep-sea mining which is vulnerable to exploitation by transnational corporations, businesses, and other corporate interests. Adding to this dangerous threat to ocean stability is U.S. President Donald Trump, who issued an executive order to carry out mining activities on both domestic and international seabeds. The Republican administration is particularly interested in expanding such operations in areas of the Eastern Pacific, with the Secretary of Commerce instructed to hasten review and issuance of licenses and permits for mineral exploration on various seabeds. Surprisingly, the United States has not ratified the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, which allows a Republican magnate in power to consider himself free to maneuver in the depths. Members of the Deep Sea Conservation Coalition do not share this view and have called on governments of other countries to unite in favor of continuing a moratorium on such interventions. Experts have pointed out that exploitation in these areas is particularly harmful, especially since the ocean takes decades to recover after being subjected to excavations and rare mineral extractions. Specialists explain that deep-sea drilling for rare metals has longer-lasting repercussions than previously thought, as confirmed by a study conducted in an area of the Northern Pacific Ocean. Sampling revealing that the seabed remained affected more than four decades after a mining test was conducted, according to an explanation published in the prestigious journal Nature. Based on these findings, experts question whether such actions could reduce the amount of oxygen available on ocean surfaces and whether these surfaces could be damaged by sediments released during excavations. The prevailing opinion is to wait for the International Seabed Authority to develop the necessary legal and environmental framework to regulate commercial exploitation. Donald Trump prefers not to delay his plans, driven by his rejection of multilateralism and his eagerness to control rare earths and other natural resources in Greenland and Ukraine. It is essential to advocate for respect for international governments to protect the ocean, as activists have pointed out that seabeds are the common heritage of humanity, not a free market for business.
That report and viewpoint were from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working well at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140, and from 6 p.m. to midnight at either 6000, 6060, or 6100. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Daylight Saving Time. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with a podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. For 27 years, the Shortwave Report has been produced and distributed off the electrical grid in Northern California using solar panels. While I am recuperating from spinal injuries, I am staying in a house connected to the grid. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.